Today's guest says relationships with narcissists can be painful, frustrating, complicated, and totally mystifying. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, and I am delighted to welcome you to this edition of Mind Talk and introduce you to today's expert, Dr. Margalis Fjellsted. Dr. Fjellsted, can you tell us a little bit about your background? And by the way, welcome to Mind Talk.
Well, thank you, Pamela. I appreciate you having me on the show. Yes, I've been a marriage and family therapist for over 35 years, and about half of the time I've spent with clients and about half the time I've spent training therapists at California State University in Sacramento. So I've been involved in the therapy field for a long time and specialized in personality disorders, especially narcissism and borderline. And my new book is Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship.
And the subtitle, which I think is really interesting and quite frankly hopeful, the subtitle is A Taker's Guide to Recovery, Empowerment, and Transformation. The term narcissistic, as you know, is thrown about certainly in today's society almost every day. I don't know if you can go a whole day without hearing that somebody is narcissistic according to somebody else. So I'd like to start with your definition of what actually makes a narcissist.
Well, we're all narcissistic at various times. In some parts of our lives, we're more narcissistic than others, like age 2, age 13, age 20. Those are common times to be involved with ourselves. But when we talk about narcissistic personality, we are talking about a pervasive pattern in which the person feels superior and entitled. They have a huge need for attention and validation. They're very controlling. They don't take responsibility. They blame others. They have very little empathy. They don't understand other people's feelings. And they can be very, very charming. But when you get into a relationship with them, then their vulnerabilities and their fears and anxieties that they keep hidden come out in that relationship, and it becomes typically pretty volatile with a lot of anger and gaslighting and very confusing kinds of communications where the narcissist says, "You're not saying what you're saying. You don't think what you think." It's almost like a mind control kind of situation. So that's what we're talking about.
So that all sounds actually pretty scary. But you say in the beginning of Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship that, in fact, in the beginning, you feel adored, understood, ecstatic, and more smitten than you have ever felt before. That sounds really wonderful and seductive and amazing.
It is wonderful and seductive. And narcissists very much want to be in a relationship with someone, so they put a very what we call a false self, or a very attractive persona forward with people that they don't know, and especially with people that they're interested in connecting with. And it's not until that person makes a commitment to them that to the narcissist feels permanent. And that can be engagement, the marriage, when you have a first child, when you move into that hugely expensive home. At those points, the narcissist feels secure then that you're going to be there with them. And then this vulnerable, angry, hurtful kind of part of them comes up to the surface. And oftentimes the only people who ever see that are the people that actually live with the narcissist.
Well, again, this is all sounding kind of scary. Because it's interesting to hear you describe that in the beginning, narcissists, I mean, emotionally, they almost walk on water. It sounds like they do everything right that there is to be done right. And then at some point when you're completely invested, then the other side of them comes out and you almost have to forget about who you are in the service of feeding who they want you to think they are.
That's absolutely right. And they engage you in helping them present this beautiful persona to the rest of the world.
So the attempts to form this, what looks like a close, loving, wonderful, amazing relationship has nothing to do with you, the partner, or even the commitment to a relationship. It really has to do with sort of keeping the narcissist's fears about him or herself hidden?
Yes, that is exactly right.
So,
but they can't hide those things all the time. And so those negative parts of them come out with that person that is committed and loyal to them.
Is it important to understand how a narcissist is created?
Well, I get asked that a lot. According to the manual that therapists use for diagnosing mental disorders, the research there that they report about says it's about 50% inherited and about 50% comes from experiences and parenting that goes on for the child as they're growing up. The parts that it makes sense to me as I have done my research that are inherited is their need for attention, their inability to be alone, their high emotional reactivity, their lack of empathy, and their anxiety levels. Those seem to be the traits that kind of are inborn in the person. And then they get reinforced along the way. And because they're very powerful energy people and they really, really need attention, they kind of reinforce everyone around them to pay attention to them. They can be entertaining and charming, and at the same time they can be hostile and angry, and people want to make things calm and quieter, and so they give in over and over to the narcissist, and that reinforces their behaviors.
Are you saying that if your parents are narcissistic, so too will you be?
Well, if you've got one narcissistic parent and one who is not, which is the most typical pattern, then out of three kids, you're likely to see at least one person, one of those children, inherit those kinds of traits. And then whether the parent reinforces it or not will push it to whether they develop into a full-blown narcissistic personality.
So if you have a parent who's a narcissistic individual, you then could theoretically be predisposed to having the same experience genetically, experientially, socially?
All of those.
Okay.
Because the parent is giving you both genetic and social and experiential input.
For parents who are listening, of young children or young adults, is there anything that you would want them to be careful of or mindful of as they're rearing their children? Or would a narcissistic parent even be concerned about that?
Well, a narcissistic parent wouldn't be concerned, but other family members or a parent who is not narcissistic could be quite concerned. And some of the things to look for in children, we don't diagnose narcissism in childhood because children are pretty self-oriented anyway, and it's hard to tell. But the things we look at is especially bullying, inability to keep friendships, and kind of the mean girl image, you know, from the movie Mean Girls.
Oh, yes.
That was narcissistic behavior. It's me, and I'm going to put you down or hurt you in some kind of way in order to make myself look better.
You say early on in your book that you tend to use the duck test.
The duck test, yes.
So tell us what the duck test is.
So many people ask me, well, this person I'm talking about here hasn't been diagnosed as a narcissist. And almost no one is ever diagnosed as a narcissist because we don't have a really good diagnostic tool. And narcissists almost never come into therapy. If they do, it lasts, one or two sessions, and then they're gone because they don't want their vulnerabilities to be exposed. So there isn't a blood test. There isn't an MRI that can scan the brain and say, yes, this is a narcissist. We have to do it by a list of qualities and behaviors and how often those behaviors happen. And so the common behavior test, if you want to figure out what, if you're going to assess something, is what does it look like? What does it sound like? How do you feel? So if it looks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, if it walks like a duck, it's a duck.
That's pretty
simple.
So
that's the duck test.
Well, let's talk about some of those characteristics of the narcissistic person. You've already mentioned some, but talk about lack of boundaries with a narcissistic person. How does that show up in their behavior?
Well, years ago, I used to be a preschool teacher, and I worked with two-year-olds. And we used to have a chart on the wall that was called the two-year-old's Bill of Rights. And for a two-year-old, everything is mine. If I ever wanted it, it's mine. If I leave it and want to come back to it, it's still mine. It's all about me. And so that is the lack of boundaries. They don't recognize the individuality of other people. They don't recognize that anyone has rights or owns anything. If you go through a divorce with a narcissist, they typically want all of the money, the house, everything that you've ever had together, they see as theirs. And they often tell their spouse, well, I worked or I did this, and so all of this is mine. And the result is often when you go through a divorce process with a narcissist, it's very long and strung out because they're fighting over everything that they think belongs to them.
Which is everything.
So, which is everything.
Okay.
They also don't see that their loved ones should ever have a thought or a feeling or a need that is different from their own. And so a spouse can say, I don't feel very close to you and I'd like to connect. And the narcissist will say, no, of course, we're very close. Just totally discount what the other person is thinking and feeling.
So discounting is one of the behaviors of a narcissist.
Absolutely. Put downs, discounting, ignoring requests. Often they say, well, tell me what's wrong. And the spouse tries to, and the narcissist keep saying, no, that's not true. No, that never happened. And so the spouse gets very confused because the narcissist is putting down every thought and every feeling that they're trying to share.
So tell me what's wrong as long as it's wrong with you.
Exactly.
So, you know, certainly, you know, I mean, we're chuckling on some levels, but this is a very painful, exhausting, truly worrisome cycle to be in.
Oh, it is. It's, in fact, I really realized in my years of practice is that often the people who came in with chronic depression, chronic anxiety, often were in these kinds of relationships. So the family members of the narcissist are all in therapy. They're all on medication. Not all, of course, but a lot of them are. And they're the ones going to therapy trying to fix the relationship, but they can't really fix it because the narcissist refuses to acknowledge anything is wrong and therefore won't work on changing anything.
You say that another one of the characteristics is splitting. Explain that.
Well, narcissists see the world as all good or all bad, all positive or all negative. And so it's hard for them to see the gray areas. They're very black and white. If they're right, you have to be wrong. There is no coming to terms or sharing ideas or compromise. It's all or nothing. And the other thing we do is that they do split into they have to be perfect, and they have to be seen as perfect, and they have to be considered always right. And so the spouse are sometimes the children have to be wrong. They're the negative ones. They're the ones who aren't cooperating. They're the ones who are wrong.
So again,
so that is splitting.
The household it is just sort of a psychological mess, for lack of a better term, with all the things that are going on that at least by the narcissist are being denied as having anything to do with him or her.
Yes, correct.
What if you've got a narcissistic spouse and a narcissistic mother-in-law? Is there hope for you?
Oh, my goodness. I'm laughing because that's just such an impossible situation, and it's often exactly what you have. Because the narcissist is very likely to have one of their parents be a narcissist. So you're out in the cold. You're always going to be the wrong one. And that is not going to be ever a good feeling situation.
It sounds like you're saying once a narcissist, always a narcissist. Is that what you're saying?
Well, in practical terms, that's yes. But people ask me, can narcissists change? I really believe they can. The problem is they deny they need to change, and they don't choose to change. They don't want to change because they're getting everything they want. Everything is going their way. So why would they want to change? And they don't want to change. They don't understand that anybody else has a different feeling than they do. They don't want to give up any attention, any of the benefits of being a narcissist. So it's pretty rare that they want to change. Now, there are programs that focus on helping narcissists learn more empathetic responses. So say a narcissist is being threatened that their spouse is going to leave them if they don't make some kind of change. And so what narcissists often are willing to do is learn how to say things empathetically, even though they don't feel the empathy particularly. they'll say, yes, I understand how you feel.
Interesting.
And things like that. And they can learn those responses, of course, and they can learn when they should be giving those responses. But one of the troubles is I work mostly with their spouses, and the spouses say, well, yeah, they can mouth the words, but I don't feel it from them.
Yeah, it sounds like an empty learning, if you will, for the narcissist. Dr. Fjellstedt,
right.
we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll pick up right here.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Fjellstedt, you said that narcissistic individuals can learn how to at least appear to be empathetic, but it sounds like you're saying while they can learn the words, the feelings don't particularly resonate with them, so it sounds like there really isn't going to be significant change with someone who's truly narcissistic.
Yes, I think that if you're involved in a relationship with a narcissist, that really hoping that they'll change or become a better person or understand your feelings or accommodate your needs, that's pretty wishful thinking, and you're going to be over and over disappointed.
Who are the people who get involved with narcissistic individuals?
Well, I call the people who get involved and stay involved with narcissists caretakers. And by that, I mean they're very other-oriented people. They're kind-hearted. They tend to be overly empathetic. They're usually agreeable, easygoing, generous, very loyal, very sympathetic. They're willing and able to pay attention to the narcissist, give in, respond, be positive, be hopeful. And those are things that really fit for the narcissist. And so narcissists really like that type of person. The trouble is the caretaker kind of in the back of their mind is expecting, you know, if I give more, then eventually this person will give back to me. And over the years, they just get worn down and exhausted because they don't really get their own needs met.
You have said that in terms of the narcissist, him or herself, that there's a difficulty with being truly intimate. So I'm wondering about the caretaker who is talking to his or her spouse or partner about the lack of intimacy in the relationship, and the narcissistic person says, well, we have sex all the time. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is what happens. The caretaker keeps asking and asking for attention, for their needs to be met, to be more emotionally close. And the narcissist just keeps denying that it's happening, saying, all we need to do is spend more time together. But more time together means paying more attention to me, the narcissist.
Okay.
They often try and cut off their partners from their family and their friends so that they get their partner's total attention and loyalty. It also makes a partner dependent upon them emotionally and often financially and socially.
So that those sound like some of the characteristics in an abusive relationship, where the abuser is wanting to cut his or her partner off from family and friends, and have the partner completely dependent and beholden, if you will, to the abuser. Is that a different dynamic from what you're describing with a narcissistic person?
Well, it's a little different. There's typically not going to be physical abuse in these relationships, but okay. Certainly I would consider a lot of this emotional abuse. It's certainly emotional control. And I've spent most of my time as a therapist working with caretaker clients to help them regain their self-esteem, their ability to make decisions on their own, to stand up for themselves, et cetera, because those things get demolished over the years. The other thing about caretakers is most of them were raised by a narcissist or a parent who had some kind of emotional, selfish-oriented problems. And so they got trained from the get-go to always think of the other person. And so that's one of the reasons caretakers end up staying. They become financially dependent, emotionally dependent, but they've also been kind of programmed to always give in and think of the other person. So then they get stuck in these relationships because the narcissist keeps saying, well, you're so selfish, you're not thinking about me. And that just reinforces them to do it more.
So for the caretaker person, the narcissistic person is really who they recognize. I mean, this is not anything new for them. They know what to do with this person.
Right. For most of them, that is true. A healthy person who's not ever been in this kind of relationship before, they meet a narcissist, and before long they get bored because a narcissist is always talking about themselves, thinking about themselves, doing everything they want. And so a person who doesn't recognize this pattern, who doesn't buy into it, will just end the relationship. And narcissists are pretty well known for having 2 month relationships over and over and over again until they find somebody who's more of a caretaker personality type, and then it clicks and the two of them kind of get stuck together.
Is there a typical way in which a relationship with a narcissistic individual will end?
Well, overall, the most often, it's the narcissist who ends the relationship because they're the ones who want to get their own way. And if their partner starts standing up to them, refusing to, you know, buy into their crazy arguments, becoming too independent, then the narcissist is more likely to want to find a more cooperative partner. Narcissists also get bored easily, and if you're not fulfilling their needs and not paying enough attention to them, then they often will often have affairs anyway, or end up leaving the relationship in some other way. Caretakers do end relationships, but often it's after the narcissist has committed some really humiliating misdeed. I've had caretakers who finally filed for divorce when their spouse had used up all of their retirement without their knowledge, who had gambled everything away, who had had affairs, who asked for their affair partner to join the family. I mean, there can be some really bizarre requests from narcissists. But it's usually fairly extreme behavior before a caretaker gets up enough nerve to leave.
Well, let's talk about the recovery from being in this kind of relationship, because it certainly sounds painful, exhausting, as we've said. Not sure that the person who leaves, who needs to heal, has a whole lot of energy to even go about the business of healing. How do they begin?
Well, I really wrote this book for that very reason, is to give people ideas and ways to get through this process. And throughout the book, I have questions for reflection to kind of get in touch with your own feelings. And I have a whole lot of different exercises to get back in touch and aware of what's going on in your own emotions and to validate yourself. And the very first exercise is breathing. And even if you're exhausted, you still need to breathe. So that's a good place to start. When you're afraid, when you're anxious, when you're depressed, the body tends to shut down its energy and you go into very shallow breathing or holding your breath. And a lot of caretakers come in and say, it feels like I have to hold my breath all the time because I never know what's going to happen next. And so we start working on breathing. If you're not breathing, your brain isn't getting the oxygen it needs to function properly. And part of the overwhelm and confusion is the caretaker holding their breath and just standing there kind of like a bunny in fright. And so you have to start your whole system going, tuning into your feelings, tuning into your own thoughts, validating your own belief system again. So it has a lot to do with focusing on yourself. And that's often a little uncomfortable for caretakers to do because they're so used to focusing on the narcissist.
I would think it would be extremely uncomfortable for them to do because it, at least at first blush, it's got to feel so wrong. They've got to start thinking, how can I be so selfish? All the things they've been taught to think and feel.
Right, right. And if they're still in interaction with the narcissist will tell them over and over how selfish they are for thinking about themselves.
So if you get to the place where you can actually leave a relationship with a narcissist, do you need to cut off all ties or can you just sort of heal at your own pace and maybe the person is in and out of your life, maybe not?
Well, if you don't have kids, it is possible to cut off entirely. If you have children with this person, then you're going to have some interaction. But over and over, I've talked to lawyers who work with these couples, and they tell the caretaker client to stop contact. But the narcissist typically instigates that contact over and over. And they do it in so many different ways. They berate the person. They send like 50 emails a day. They may send 100 texts in a day. The texts vary between, "You're so wonderful, I need you back, I'll do anything you want." And when their partner kind of demurs or doesn't respond, then they start sending the hostile texts. "You are always trailer trash. I don't know why I ever married you," and that kind of thing. So it's back and forth. It's crazy making. And often caretakers want to be acknowledged and heard and seen, and so they keep trying to explain themselves, and they send emails back, and they send texts back, or they call the person. But it works best with the least amount of contact that you have to have because the narcissist will work to get what they want, whatever that is.
It sounds like stalking behavior, some of what you describe. Would you characterize it as such?
Often narcissists will stalk their partners. Yes. They stalk them on Facebook. They stalk them in person. I had one client whose ex-husband would stand in the median where she had to turn on her way to work and be shouting at her. That was a pretty extreme example. But, yeah, sometimes they do end up stalking.
You know, it's interesting the impact that the digital world has on all of our abilities, I guess, to be intrusive and to be intruded upon. You mentioned Facebook stalking, which is not something that I would ordinarily think of, but it certainly happens often, way too often.
Right. I've had a lot of clients who have had to stop their Facebook account because their ex-spouse would be sending emails to all of their friends, he befriend everyone on their account, and then tell his story, his version of how it was. It's added a dimension of harassment that can be very painful.
And frightening.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the reasons often caretakers go back. They're afraid. They're afraid the narcissist will ruin their reputation. They're afraid they're going to try and turn the children against them. They're afraid of the rumors that a narcissist may be starting in their community about who they are and what they've done. And typically what a narcissist says their partner is doing is exactly what they're doing.
Ah.
So it's almost a total projection. Almost everything a narcissist says about you is really about them. They really don't see other people as people. I mean, they don't recognize people have other feelings. If I feel angry, you must be angry. If I'm cheating, you must be cheating. So that's how it goes.
So there's a whole lot of thinking, magical thinking, perhaps. There's a whole lot of self-involvement, as you've been saying repeatedly, in the mind of a narcissist that almost doesn't leave any space for someone else.
That's really a good way to put it. There is no space for anyone else because they are 24/7 thinking about what they need, want, and feel.
The narcissistic parent who, let me rephrase that. The caretaker parent who is concerned that the narcissistic parent may in fact be trying to create a breach with the children, that sounds like a very real fear.
It is a real fear. And I tell the caretaker parent to be as honest with their children about what they think and feel and what their values are, to emphasize to the child that this is how we do it here and this is how we treat other people. Caretaker parents are often very unsure about what to say about the narcissistic parent. I mean, they don't want to put the parent down. On the other hand, they don't want to say, oh, your dad loves you and loves us, and it's, you know, he just had to go his own way, kind of a vague sort of thing, because the kids don't buy it.
Right.
And I suggest to them that they say, they just focus on the behaviors of the narcissist that the children have observed.
Okay.
Saying, you know, dad and I fight when we get together. Or dad says he loves me, but it doesn't feel that way to me, and so I need to do something different with my life. If the narcissist parent lies about something, I encourage the caretaker parent to tell the child the truth.
Interesting. Dr. Fjellstad, we're going to take a break and then we will be right back. Just before the break, you referred to the dad as potentially being the narcissist. Would you say that men are or women are more likely to be narcissistic? Is the experience evenly distributed across the sexes? What's your thought?
Well, it's hard to know. The research that we've had in the past about narcissism has identified many, many more males as narcissistic, but I'm not sure that's really the case. I think males are encouraged to think about themselves and to push their agenda forward, and that's part of what we teach men to do in general. But I've seen a lot of women narcissists too, although women do tend to appear much more emotionally distraught in these same kind of behaviors, and we call that borderline personality disorder. So it's hard to tell whether there's. I tend to get a lot more clients who are women because, number one, women go to therapy more often, and women are, by and large, trained to be caretakers much more than men, to think about their spouse, to give in, to accommodate his needs. And so I think we have some reinforcement about sex roles that tend to skew things. But in honesty, I don't know if there's really more narcissistic men than women.
Okay. So that kind of takes us back to the duck test.
Yes.
The caretaker who has found a way to leave the relationship, you acknowledge that the caretaker is going to go through a grieving process even if they realize that the best thing for them to do was to leave the relationship. I would think there would still be some ambivalence and a lot of self-doubt about the decision. Emotionally.
Oh, tremendous.
Okay.
Tremendous. Yeah. I, in fact, do a lot of phone consultations with people who have read my book, and often that ambivalence is what they need to talk about. This has been someone that you love, and in fact, narcissists are kind of like two different people. One's the charming, exciting, fun person, and the other is the blaming, hostile, attacking person. And you love the good one, and you are really not happy with the bad one, so then you're always flipping back and forth. So there is a lot of ambivalence. The grief is also, you're grieving so much. You're grieving the dream that you and the narcissist designed when you first met. Narcissists are big on designing these beautiful dreams about how your life is going to be. So there's that loss. There's also, if you're divorcing, there's financial loss there. It means also your children are going to spend half their time with this person and half with you, and you worry about that. There is a lot to let go of. And if you've also realized that this is a pattern with you, that you keep picking this kind of person, then you're grieving, what do I do from here on out? Where do I go? How will I stay out of these relationships?
Speaking of a pattern, I would think that the caretaker would be particularly vulnerable to actually much too rapidly getting into a relationship with someone else who, quite frankly, might look kind of similar.
Well, actually, caretakers tend to take a lot of time in between. They're pretty emotionally traumatized by these relationships, and they're not sure they ever want to be in another relationship.
That's understandable.
They're often worried that they can't trust their own judgment. So for caretakers, usually the process is a very long process of healing before they want to risk another relationship. Narcissists, on the other hand, can't stand not being in a relationship. So they will have one lined up immediately or even before they leave their relationship they're in.
One of the things that you talk about in the last portion of healing from a narcissistic relationship, and this is in the Transform Your Life section, is forgiveness. What role does forgiveness play in this transition, if you will, from being in the relationship that was so hurtful and exhausting to coming into your own and living your own healthier, happier life?
Well, the chapter on forgiveness is pretty close to the end, so you have to do a lot of healing before you're ready and able to forgive. And my idea of forgiveness is you aren't saying that it's okay this person acted this way. You've acknowledged how much harm it's happened, what the harm has been, and you have worked on healing that harm. And at that point, you can start forgiving, which I consider letting go. So often caretakers hang on to all the injustices that happened in that relationship, and it does them no good at all. It doesn't help them avoid it in the future. It doesn't make them feel better. It keeps them in depression and loneliness. So forgiveness is basically a way of letting go, saying, okay, this happened, but it's in the past, and it doesn't have to define who I am and where I'm going with my life. So forgiveness is primarily for the person who's doing the forgiving, because actually the narcissist doesn't care if you forgive them or not. It's not, they don't care. They've gone on with their life already.
Well, and from the narcissist's perspective, I would think there's nothing to forgive.
Exactly. You know, you're the one that was the problem, so who cares what you have to say or think about it?
You know, the issue of forgiveness is certainly a complicated one for many, in part because I think, you know, part of what we often hear in society is you need to just forgive and forget. And that's not what you're saying at all.
No, I don't think you should ever forget. Forgetting means that you're denying what happened, and that makes you more vulnerable to doing it again. You should remember what happened. This is how it was. And I'm not going to let that happen again. Therefore, I don't have to be worried in the future about it. Forgiveness also gets, there's trouble trying to forgive when you're still angry. And so you have to get through your anger. And when you are through your anger and you're really not angry anymore, you are pretty much healed. And in fact, the person, the experience you went through with this person no longer really has to matter that much because it's over, it's done with, you learned what you had to learn, and you've become a stronger person, and you can move on with your own life. I keep emphasizing that you need to focus on what your life is about, not what the narcissist's life is or what they're doing.
And that's so easy to do, certainly at the beginning of a breakup with anyone. I mean, how many times do we hear that?
Yeah.
You kind of want your partner to be devastated that you're not there anymore.
Oh, yes. And typically the narcissists have already got a new relationship and remarried and moved on. And it can be heartbreaking for a caretaker who says, I'm still grieving. You're grieving because you really had a relationship. A narcissist doesn't grieve because they never really knew anything about you. They were just totally involved with themselves.
So there never really was a relationship. There never really was a connection.
Correct. Not for the narcissist.
So it sounds like the caretaker had more of a relationship with the dream that was created than the reality that was lived.
Again, that's a very good way to put it, yes. They were connected with the dream, not the real person.
At the end of each of your chapters, as you indicated, you offer questions for reflection. And one of the questions, as you really are encouraging the reader to focus on really transforming themselves and really healing, is it's a simple question, but I think it's a powerful question, which is, who already loves you?
Yes. Narcissists can imply to their partner that they're the only one who loves them. And yet, caretakers have mothers and fathers and children and siblings and friends and coworkers, and for most that entire group, they find that caretaker person to be a lovely person. I mean, this is a generous, kind-hearted, empathetic person who wouldn't love them. But caretakers get cut off in their own mind from the fact that other people care about them. So getting back in touch, creating a support system by acknowledging who loves you, and focusing your energy and your time and getting support from those people, and it's already there for caretakers, by and large, that they already have a support system. They're just not aware of it, and they're not using it.
And as you said earlier, the narcissist has done as much as he or she could to remove them from their core support system. So now it's time to really revisit those folks.
Oh, definitely. Because that's really where their real life is going to be, is with their family and friends.
One of the things that I think is so powerful about the work that you've done here is the constant reminder that there really is life after a relationship with someone who really didn't have relationship skills at all, that you really can heal and transform and move on to be in a joyful place.
Absolutely. Almost everyone who, has gone through this healing process will say, you know, my life is 100% better. I now have real people who care about me. I have real relationships. I really get fed and nurtured by other people. I don't feel alone anymore. Yes.
And it's
much better.
Much better, much healthier, and they probably have a broader range of experiences just across their life.
Yeah, that could well be, yes.
How important is it for the caretaker to do journaling?
Well, I really encourage people to do journaling because a journal is a little bit like a part of you that's watching and guiding you. As you write things down on paper, oftentimes thoughts and feelings come to mind that you just sitting there thinking about them, they don't appear. Somehow, when you're writing, they appear on the page. You can go back and verify your thoughts and feelings. And especially if the narcissist is telling you the opposite, you go back to your notes, you can say, yeah, look, I wrote this on Monday, and this is what really happened. So it can help you to be grounded and stay in reality. And I know some people, it's not the best method for them. So people have to find their own paths. But I do find journaling helps the majority of people.
And I would suggest that the questions that you have laid out at the end of each chapter might be a great way to begin one's journal of recovery.
Well, and that's really the purpose of those questions, is to help people start that process. And those are the kinds of questions that I use in my therapy sessions with people to help them go through this healing process. So I've tried to put in this book as much of the things that I have done with clients over the years that I've found successful to help in this healing process.
Dr. Fjellstedt, there's so much more that we could talk about, but time does not permit. Is there a website that folks can go to for more information?
My website is margalistherapy.com, and there's information there. I have a free newsletter that goes out once a month. They can find out information about my books, phone consultations, whatever. And also, there's a whole list of blogs that I've written that they can access as well.
All right. Would you spell the website, please?
Certainly. It's MARGALIS, as in Sam, F as in, oh, no, sorry, Margalis, and then therapy. Sorry, I'm giving you a different... So it's MARGALIS therapy, therapy, all run together, .com.
Terrific. Thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you for the time and the thoughtfulness that went into the creation of Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is available to you daily as an educational public service. You can always go to mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.org. You can sign up at the iTunes store. You can download the Mind Talk app from either the iTunes store or Google Play, and they are all at no cost. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to Mind Talks. I'm always interested in hearing from you, so do send me an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. And folks, I want you to remember always, if it's unacceptable, then that's what it is. You take care.